Hello, everyone. Welcome to the eTech Leadership Table. This is a podcast where we invite you to pull up a chair, grab a cup of coffee, and join us as we tackle some remarkable discussions on everything leadership. I'm Melissa Wood. I'm your host. I'm the Dean of Leadership Development at eTech Global Services. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the eTech Leadership Table. Just pull up a chair, grab your favorite drink, and we've got a new friend. You know, someone says you can't make old friends, and I believe that there are friends out there that you've never met that will probably be some of your most favorite people in the entire world, and today is that day, I believe. When she first popped up on my screen, I saw the pink scarf with the turquoise, and I immediately fell in love with her, so I hope that you do too. So today's topic, before I introduce our new friend, but today's topic is about emotional intelligence and mastering that emotional intelligence for the people we work with, the people we do life with, for the customers that we serve. And Sandra, Miss Sandra Thompson, is a master expert in this field. She will probably tell you, you know, maybe she's not an expert, but I believe that she is an expert in this field. So, you know, when we were growing up, my parents invited all sorts of people at the table, and some people have adopted me and their family because they have been at the table with us. So Sandra, welcome to the eTech Leadership Table.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for having me. Already, we've been having a chat, and it just feels like this is just the natural place to be.
Good. I'm glad. I hope that it feels that way throughout the entire conversation. And I hope that, so I tell all of our podcasters, you better grab a pen, you better get your laptop out, because this is not just hearing two people talk. This is us learning together. And so Sandra and I have already talked about time. You don't get to buy back time. So take this time and be better. Just help yourself be better. So we will link Miss Expert, Miss EI Expert, is bio in the link. Miss Namisha, she's our behind the scenes. And I want to shout out to Namisha behind the scenes. A lot of times the lighting crew doesn't get the praise they need. So on this special podcast today, I want to shout out to Miss Namisha. She is all professional businesswoman, and she helps our clients have an effortless customer experience. And I just appreciate her so much.
Me too. I thought it was tremendous. So thank you so much. Made it so easy for me.
Well, fantastic. Well, Namisha also will link Sandra's bio. And Namisha, link your bio so people can see how awesome you are too. We can add that in there. All right. So I just want to cover a few fun things I've learned about my new friend, Sandra, right? She has no idea what I'm about to say. So, and some of them are just really inquisitive that I want to know. So we're going to talk about emotional intelligence, and let's get into a little bit about Sandra. In 2020, I saw that you had a coach. It said that your coach asked you to write a eulogy, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So when you say coach, would that be like a life coach or a business coach that you reached out to?
Yeah, it was a life coach, actually, because I was at the point where I was really enjoying my work. I wanted someone to help me just figure out whether I was on the right path, whether I was missing a trick, how I could grow. I mean, quite honestly, I think that every so often I dip into that just to give me further clarity, to give me more signposting. And she, honestly, the kind of exercises that she got me doing, I definitely didn't expect, but they were reflective practices, and they helped me understand, one, I think the value of what I was doing, two, the things I really needed to park, and the things that I really should be more grateful for. And finally, I think the things that were on the periphery that I didn't perhaps have the courage to investigate. So I would recommend them for everyone.
Absolutely. I read your eulogy.
You did. Okay. How did you feel about that?
Well, that's my second thing I want to bring up. Why a nephew? You wrote the eulogy, and it says to be read by a nephew. So why did you put on there that it had to be read by a nephew?
So I have three nephews and one niece, and obviously I love them all, but there's one particular nephew who is utterly hilarious. And he was one of those children who had an answer for everything, but in a very kind way, and was so incredibly curious. I went on that learning journey with him. And even now, at the grand age of 28 and at the height of 6'5",
Wow.
still go, I mean, I'm 5'2", right? So that's why it's a dramatic statement. We still go for dinner and we still connect and we still exchange facial expressions where no one needs to say anything. We just know.
I
And
love
it's even one of those, we have this raised eyebrow thing sometimes at Christmas and sometimes at Easter when all the family are together, where it's just that look of, you know what I'm thinking, I don't need to say it. And so I thought if anyone was going to pull off this eulogy, hold it together and be able to pull it off and to give it the energy and the attention and the focus, I knew that he could do it.
that is phenomenal. I knew that you and I had a connection there when I saw nephew must read. I have one of those nephews. His name is Colby, and he was before I even had children. He was there, and as similar personalities. He was my first person to ever write a book for. I wrote a book for him when he turned 30 called What I See, and I wanted him to see what I saw in him. So I think that's fabulous. Another question I have about your eulogy that we have in common. I want to know about Aunt Betty.
Do you know what? Auntie Betty, so my half of my family are Welsh, so my mum was Welsh. And then for those of you who are listening, there is a kind of stereotype of a Welsh woman who they're normally quite petite, but they are so incredibly strong. They can hold a family together. They can cook for their 10 kids. They
Yes.
can drink most people under the table, you know, all sorts of things. And she was incredibly bright, so incredibly street smart, and people would warm to her because she was such a character. She was cheeky. She would ask the questions that no one else would ask. She'd get away with it because of her generosity. And, you know, I studied in Cardiff, which is the capital of Wales, and I would go up and see her every so often on the weekend. And she'd do that typical thing of this incredible embrace that would almost suffocate you, and then she'd send me on my way with these Welsh cakes that are like flat scones, and she would send me letters most week
Oh,
just
wow.
describing the most fascinating observations of people that
Yes.
I just love, because she was so creative. And oh, I could go on about her all day, but she was the eldest of seven kids. And you knew where she would be because everyone was flocking around her. That's how it was with her.
You know, I want, first of all, I had an Aunt Betty too.
Brilliant.
When I saw Aunt Betty, my Aunt Betty passed away at 104 years
Woo!
age.
There
And
it
when
is.
you say a feisty individual, she actually was a telephone operator back in the day, you know, where they would pull the, you know, connect you to whatever. But just when I saw you write your Aunt Betty on there, I thought, you know what? If her face lights up about Aunt Betty, if she added her in her eulogy, I know that she must be incredibly important to her. So, and the reason I bring those two things up is that I want our friends at the table to understand that this is not something I believe that you've done later in life. You just started studying a book and you're like, oh, we're going to learn about customer experience and you know, emotional intelligence. I believe there are people that you've mentored, like your nephew, you've have a relationship with, and I believe early in your years, like an Aunt Betty, you've had people that have poured into you to create the standard that you know, that is here today. So this is not just, you know, we've seen many of people that have read a book and speak very eloquently, but this is really who you are. You've had people around you your entire life that have molded you into be an emotional intelligence expert, which I think is phenomenal.
It's a thank you for bringing that up, because I do believe that we are, of course, the result of our environment and the people that we meet. But there's another little thing in there which not many people know about, but when I was very little, I was very shy, painfully shy. But with my parents, I definitely had a certain spark. And so when I was, I think, 8 years old, my mum took me off to go and have drama lessons. I went for acting school. And really, if she hadn't have done that, I do wonder how my confidence would have built, how my empathy would have been trained. Because when I look back at the opportunity I have to speak to audiences and to relate to others, I do think that that had quite a dramatic impact on how I showed up, how I related to people. I don't know that I would be doing what I do now without my mum spotting that in me and sending me off to learn how to act. And of course, when I was playing up at home, she'd be telling me, "I think you'll leave your drama lessons at the drama school, thank you, young lady, not at home." But certainly for those that are listening that have young children, I would like to just offer up that whether it's a 6 week course or whatever it is, don't underestimate the power of acting and drama and those creative aspects, because it trains people techniques that help them build this ability to connect to others, honestly.
That is fabulous. That is fabulous. So I think you they better be taking notes, Sandra. That's all I can tell them, is they better be taking notes. Okay. So we're getting off the eulogy. There's just one thing I wanted to really point out to you about the quote that you made in your eulogy. And I do life coaching, and it just really made me think about, could I sit and write my eulogy, like what people think about us? And we chase a lot of things in life, and when you really sat down and wrote that eulogy, I think that there was some probably significant self-reflection located in there. A quote that you have, if guys, if you have not read this, Namisha will put a link out. Namisha, put a link out there. I want everyone to see this. It's absolutely phenomenal. I think it needs to get more attention. One of the quotes in the eulogies is, "One thing's for sure." I just picture her nephew reading this. "One thing's for sure, she was driven. Driven to do anything she could for her own learning and to help others progress." And so I think you're going to see, she wrote this eulogy in 2020. It's 2025. Can you imagine what Sandra's life has been through in those 5 years, and then us too, like how what all has happened in 5 years. And here you are today, driven to do anything you could for your own learning. I've been seeing you grow and to help others progress, and that's why you're sitting at the table with us today, is to help us grow. That's not it. You're not here to show us how smart you are. We know how. We can see that. We can read about you. We can go out. I saw your TEDx talk. Like, we even have a TEDxer here, so we know how incredibly intelligent you are. But even in your eulogy, you are driven to do anything she could for her own learning and to help others progress. So I hope that everyone listening today doesn't take that lightly, because someone is really pouring into us. So thank you very much. If you have not went and downloaded your Shine Bright book on EQ mastery, go do it. Melissa is purchasing that right now. I think that's phenomenal. And you haven't seen the TEDx talk, go in there. And your website is absolutely phenomenal. The blue background is just beautiful and easy to navigate. So there's the customer experience right there. So let's go into some questions about emotional intelligence. I think that the reason we've spent this time to talk about you is because I want to set the stage and show real life emotional intelligence. Anybody can answer questions. Anybody can speak, but I want them to see the Sandra behind the intelligence. And I hope that we've been able to do that. So, ready for question number one?
I am ready.
Okay. Can you explain how understanding the brain's emotional process can practically improve customer and employee experience?
Yes. Would you like me to expand on that? I'm
Yes,
getting
will you? Will
a
you? Will
joke.
you explain it,
I
please?
will. I will. I will. So there's something really interesting that goes on in this customer experience space, and I only really got to grips with it when I trained in this emotional intelligence to becoming an emotional intelligence coach. So when we think about how we've evolved, We have these, I mean, it's a phenomenal organ. Our brain is such a complicated, messy, beautiful, phenomenal thing. It has more capability than any other organism in the universe. We don't understand it yet, but what we do know is that it's evolved over time, and there are sections in there that operate today in a way that operated thousands of years ago. And what do I mean by that? What I mean is that we have the amygdala, which is the emotional center. The amygdala is really the flight, fight, freeze, whatever you want to call it. And it's triggered to do that in a whole number of ways. So when we don't get an update from our organization because we've ordered something, we don't know whether it's coming or not. When we get an email or a text message from one of our colleagues, which seems a little bit aggressive, or we don't quite understand what it means, but it doesn't sound too good. All of these things in everyday life causes our emotional center to respond. And that isn't always helpful. And what I mean by that is very often customer and employee experience programs are designed in a rational way. They don't factor in the complexity of our emotions, how we respond to particular things, how we react to particular things. There's a neuroscientist called Lisa Feldman Barrett, actually over in Boston, who's been done. She's written loads of books. She's done incredible amount of testing, and she talks about how every single one of us have completely different emotions as a consequence of how we've been brought up, the meaning we attach to our experiences, and the context of the moment. Now, if we understand that, we would stop writing and designing customer journeys, assuming that our customers will feel that thing and we can influence their behavior to think that thing. What we often ignore when we are designing employee experiences is the impact we have when we don't communicate fully, when we create uncertainty, when we leave a void in the information so our imagination goes wild. I get a meeting invite on a Friday afternoon with no agenda when my boss always gives me an agenda and there's redundancies going on in the organization. I've decided in my brain I'm going to be fired at 4 o'clock. All of these things are avoidable if we understood how the brain is wired and the fact that we have this emotional center, which is far more powerful than the more recent bit of our brain, which is the prefrontal cortex, which is at the front, which is the executive center, and it's where all of our logical thinking goes on. If we're triggered and we're nervous and we're anxious and we're stressed, that part of our brain shuts down the prefrontal cortex. I'm not going to be writing a pros and cons list of whether I'm going to get run over or not. I'm instantly going to be getting out of the way of the bus. And it's exactly the same with our customers and with our employees. So I guess the summary of all of this rant is we don't think about thinking. We don't think about the brain and how we all have a very different perspective on the world. We assume that we will create these processes and these policies that make sense to the organization, but they're just not how humans think and behave. You deal with an angry customer, anger is the result of a fear, threat. It's about not having control. And if you start to strip that back, then you can relate to that customer. They're angry as a consequence of something. And then you've got emotional contagion. As humans, we react to one another. If you're going to be really smiley and happy, more than likely, I'm going to feel really smiley and happy. If I have an angry customer, it's going to get my back up. I'm going to feel a bit angry, a bit upset as a consequence of that. We just don't figure those things in. And so I guess fundamentally, the emotional processes that are driven by some of these lobes within our brain, if we just understood them a bit more, we would design things far better to allow for everyone's interpretation of what we're talking about, everyone's interpretation of our intention, and we would just consider compassion and empathy in a much better way.
Wow. We don't think about thinking. We don't think about thinking. You're exactly right. You know, when you were talking, I'm such an image person, so I'm just really like, I'm taking tons of notes. Everyone knows on a podcast, I've gotten messages before, what are you writing? And I'm like, I'm almost writing every, I've already written like so many notes that you said. But you know what I started thinking about, Sandra, is have you ever done this? Like, remember when we were kids, we would take those Mentos and we would put them inside the Coca-Cola? You remember? Okay, and what happened? An explosion, right? But we didn't think about the science behind why the explosion. And I hear that's what you're, we just watch the explosion,
That's
right?
right.
But there really is a science behind the explosion. And you're helping us today to understand that there is a brain science around why our brains explode, right?
That's
Why
right.
our amygdala is exploding. Have you ever heard the term flip your lid?
Yes,
Flip your
yes.
lid. So when I was a student in elementary, and then we actually have an elementary teacher that teaches at our company now. She's phenomenal. But you know, they showed us an image of like your hand. This was your amygdala, and this is your frontal cortex.
Yeah,
And
that's right.
when there is that angry customer, that
Yeah.
email at 4 p.m. on Friday, we flip our lid. That's literally, and we're operating off of our amygdala.
That's
So
right.
I love how you're bringing, don't just watch the explosion or just experience the explosion. Understand, start thinking about our thinking behind things.
Do you know that point about the Mentos and the bottle of pop is I just want to take it to another level on the metaphor, because very often, we might find it amusing when we're doing it for the first time, but actually, as an observer, you'd mop it up and it would be an inconvenience, and you'd want to tidy it away and put everything back. And that's really when we think about complaints, really, when you think about it, the organization has created this through not making something clear, or having policies that don't make any sense, or having a ridiculous journey, or making it really difficult for someone to complain. That's the customer that's fizzing right now. And so, what are you going to do? You're going to look at that, observe it, and prevent it from happening again. Well, that's the ideal situation. Or in many organizations, it's a case of just tidy it up and hopefully it'll go away.
No, another Mento gets dropped. Another
That's right.
drop. Everything gets dropped. And I want to point out, you have we I love you building off the analogy. And I want to point out that people can be friends if they say pop or coke. You can tell that I'm from Texas when everything's called Coke, Sandra. Okay.
Other brands are available, folks.
Okay, so now let's think about, okay, we've talked about that. I love the way you said that the customers are sitting there fizzing, and we do just try to clean things up, and then there we go again. It's like an
That's
insane,
right.
it's almost an insanity model that we're following. Like,
That's right.
let the explosion happen, let's do it again. Let the explosion happen and do it again.
Yeah.
That leads into this one. How can organizations use insights from neuroscience to help design better training programs? I know that you train, right? And you have your own programs. So what can organizations do? Because there are people sitting at the table with us today that own their own companies, they're leaders in companies, they have startup companies. Startup companies, a lot of people work at one job and they have four other startup companies. I know that's
Yeah.
new in the Gen Z, but
Fabulous.
what can companies do to increase the skills in this area for CX and their leadership teams?
So the first thing is a very practical thing, actually. And this is all around how we create memory and knowledge and new habits. So ultimately, my first piece of practical advice is to do little and often. So very often when I'm teaching this stuff, I'll do a half day where I'm explaining the brain science, and I'll give everyone a set of tasks, and then they complete the tasks through repetition. Because what we know is that there are neural pathways in the brain, and these neural pathways can be taken down if they're not used, so they kind of diminish if they're not used, and they can be built if you do something repeatedly. So the process is called neuroplasticity, and it's marvelous because there was an old saying that an old dog can't learn new tricks. Well, actually, neuroscience proves that an old dog can learn a shed load of tricks and can do far more if you just repeatedly practice over time. So in training, please don't do a full day workshop and then think everyone knows what they're doing and everyone's going to behave differently, because they will not. Start with something significant, someone people understand, and just keep doing it. Now, people will know the book Atomic Habits by James Clear. That is the go-to on this topic. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the kind of methodology of what emotional intelligence is. So the model that I follow is a Goleman model because I trained with him, but it's the four domains. It starts with emotional self-awareness, emotional self-management, social intelligence, and relationship management. So start with the first two, because in fact, that is the game changer. Emotional self-awareness is simply coming off autopilot and just knowing how you're feeling. It is as simple as that. But it can be difficult because we're all running at a million miles an hour and we don't find any time. Simply, when you're training people or if you're influencing the behavior of leaders, ask them when you give them a little journal book, just spend 2 minutes a day reflecting on the day. How did it feel? What went on? How was it? Because when they do that every day, even just for 2 minutes, they obviously start to see patterns. They start to develop what's called their emotional granularity. They're able to describe how they're feeling far better. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is one of the key things you can do to build emotional self-awareness. Now, that's not a training program, in inverted commas, but it is a very robust and it's a very well-trodden and proven route to build emotional self-awareness. So once you then start to think, oh, I'm feeling a bit weird about that. Why am I feeling weird about that? Or, oh, that's really angered me. Or, I feel great. That is really amazing. So both the plus and the minuses, or what we perceive to be. The next part of it is the emotional self-management. And this is literally coming away from your desk, changing the context, doing five star jumps, if that's what you need to do, because that will mix up the chemicals in your body. It starts to disperse the cortisol, which is the stress hormone. You might get a little bit more serotonin. That's good. You've changed it up. You've stopped to breathe deeply, because that amygdala, if it feels a sense of stress in your body, then it goes, oh my God, right, Sandra's really stressed. Let's get real stressed. Let's do that. But if you start doing something in your body and you start to breathe, box breathing, your body goes, okay, so she's breathing. So the amygdala goes, do you know what? She's totally fine. Let's just chill out for a bit. So start doing some of those things, because the choice we have as a species to decide on how we respond to something is utterly remarkable. Here's the stimulus in my left hand. Here's the reaction or the response. The bit in the middle is your decision on what you do. And I know we talked earlier, didn't we, Melissa, about Let Them, the work of Mel Robbins. Brilliant. In that moment, you can decide how you want to show up. Do you want to freak out your colleagues by slamming the door or slamming your laptop or shouting or growling or whatever it might be? Probably not, because you want to be consistent in your behavior. But these are things that doesn't take a training, a formal training course, but it does need people to have prompts to keep practicing this stuff. So in summary, please don't do a full day workshop and think that everyone knows it. It doesn't work that way. Think about emotional self-awareness and self-management as two things. Give people little exercises to do. Keep them doing it. Check in with them. Give them prompts. And finally, bring it to life. Ask them, when was the last time you totally flipped your lid? When was the last time you sat back for a moment and you thought to yourself, thank goodness I didn't speak? Because if I had, I would have ruined a relationship, and I don't even know if that person would have forgiven me because I have a funny feeling that I won't even remember what I said because I was so angry.
Look, you know what? Can you create little Sandra dolls and that speak, and we can put them in our pocket? I'm thinking that's going to be your next phase of life, is little Sandra dolls.
Oh my gosh. Do you know what? I'll mention that to my partner and I'll see what he says.
Okay. We need a Sandra doll. I'm my goodness, this is so good. I love, at our company at eTech, I know you have an emerging leaders program. I was reading about that. And then we have an aspiring leader program here at eTech, people that aspire to be a leader. And
Fab.
we graduate three groups each year.
Yeah.
And I was just in a recent graduation where they were asking Q&As.
Yeah.
And the facilitator said, this is the number one question that was asked. And this is, they ranked all the questions. And the number one question was, what's the most important skill set that I need to work on as a leader? And I sat and thought about it for a few minutes, and I thought, well, it is that emotional intelligence. It's the self-awareness. I said self-awareness specifically, right? Because we can be so intelligent, you can have such head knowledge, but no heart knowledge about how to apply these things. And what you've done is really given us practical. I love practical. Anybody that knows Melissa, we know we love practical. About, you can decide how you want to show up, and giving us these practical ways, and helping us come off of autopilot, changing your location, those types of things. You and I both write, and we train, and we facilitate, and we speak. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I have to just get in my car and just drive so that I can think clearly about what I need to do. And now I understand when I hear you talk that it really is. There's some intelligence around that that happens to your brain, right?
Yeah.
So listen here, podcasters. So if anybody's at the table, what you're listening for, don't just watch the explosion from the Mentos. There's actual science around why that happens. And it's the same thing around our brain. Okay, well, AI is a big thing. Everybody's using AI. I just created, Sandra, I just created Jim Iub a baby avatar for himself for AI.
Wow.
Took his grown adult Jim Iub picture, moved it over to AI, and now we have a little baby Jim Iub. And I think that it's going to help everybody in our company love him even more when they see the little baby Jim Iub. It just does something when you see someone, as a parent. We even did that with our president and CEO, Matt Rocco, and it's phenomenal. So AI, what I'm saying is AI can really do. There's a rise of AI. There's emotion recognition technologies. They can read someone's their lid's about to flip. There's all sorts of things that it can do. How do you see neuroscience? Since I think you're the brain around the fizz, how do you see neuroscience informed emotional intelligence evolving in the future of customer experience and employee engagement for that matter?
So it's a really, really interesting question. And I will be honest and say that I don't think I probably have the very latest knowledge on the very latest technology. But what I can say is that we are, as a species, incredibly sophisticated. So I'm going to draw me back, just draw us back for a second to the point I made about Lisa Feldman Barrett talking about all of the different emotions that we feel and all of the reasons why we feel them. So there was a time when I was worried actually about technology doing us an injustice around what we're feeling and how we're feeling it. And again, going back to Lisa Feldman Barrett, many years ago, she showed a picture of a face that looked quite like it was grimacing. It looked like it was full of pain and anguish. It was kind of a real close up of just the face, not even the hair. And then you zoom out on this picture, and it's Serena Williams holding up the trophy at Wimbledon. And she questioned at that point the ability of facial recognition to understand without context what is really going on for humans. Now, I think that there's been massive advances since then, and I think the amount of data coming in is becoming more sophisticated. So I think that firstly, the amount of data that AI can consume, as long as the way that the AI has been taught in a way that is fully appreciative of every aspect of who we are as a species, then I feel comfortable about how it will continue to evolve. I'm concerned if the kind of the training material that it's had to develop this isn't sound, because we might be led down a particular path. But apart from that, I think that non-verbal communication, as I know that you will know and your listeners will know, non-verbal communication is the majority of communication that exists. My body language, the tone of my voice, the things I don't say, the sounds I make that are unique to me. When IA can pick up on all of that complexity that I have developed for myself over the last 53 years, and it can accurately predict what that weird grunting sound means, whether that's a good or a bad thing, and whether that part frown, part laughter, part don't know what she's doing with her face look means, then I think we're in a good place to help society define what it is to be human. And that, I think, is the probably the biggest question in the room. And it's often the question I take to tech conferences, which is, if AI does one thing, I hope it gives us a kick in the pants, as I think you might say in America, to define who we are. Who are we as humans? Because if this AI machinery can understand us as well as we understand ourselves, what else is there for us to do?
That's
And
that. That's that look. You said that you and your nephew, when you're at family events,
that's right.
it's that look that you give each other, and he knows. That is just a look. Is like, we're out of here, or Aunt Gertrude's lost her mind again, or put water in her drink. She doesn't need another. She doesn't need another drink.
So I don't I'm not sure if I've really answered your question, so let me just summarize what I've said. So ultimately, I think that machines will be probably in a position to teach us how to become more empathetic. I do think that there will always be that sliver of space that it can't quite grapple with because of the cultural differences, because the meaning I attach to experiences, because in that moment in time, because of the context of the situation, there will always be that little slither that it will never get its head around. But I expect that it probably will teach us how to be more empathetic, because it will be processing such an incredible amount of data from every aspect of people's lives.
Yeah, I agree, and I thank you for the summary, and I believe that I'm aligned with you a bit more in that area, maybe even more so. I thoroughly believe that each one of us is uniquely and individually made, and I don't believe, because it's so unique and so individually made, I don't believe that a total machine is going to be able to get all those raised eyebrows. You know what I'm saying? And
Oh yeah, that's right. And I think the final point on that is that the Sandra Thompson today is very different to the Sandra Thompson 20 years ago, and very different from the one 20 years before that. So how these machines will keep up with that evolution, I don't know. It might even predict what my attitude will be when I'm 64. Watch out for that space.
They don't know about my hormones. I don't think they understand how they can go up and down. I don't think they're going to be able to get that. All right. Thank you for that. So what are there's some blind spots, and there are some emotional intelligence blind spots that leaders and CX professionals have. How can neuroscience help uncover and address some of these blind spots? So what do you think those blind spots are?
So, number one, I think empathy is completely misunderstood. This whole idea that we walk a mile in our customer's shoes is absolute rubbish. for all of the reasons I've given before. We have a different set of perspectives. We are shaped by our life experiences. And so I think that that's a blind spot. People thinking that they know what empathy is, they know how to do it. And when they practice it from a point of view of, oh, yeah, I had an experience like that, or, oh, yeah, my friend was in exactly the same position, we are doing more damage than good. I've mentioned already about the half-day training program and this kind of washing of empathy. That's a blind spot because we don't understand how the brain works for all the reasons I talked about with neural pathways. The final thing, I guess, is believing that EQ is a nice to have and it's a soft skill. You know, when you look at the World Economic Forum and the kind of things that they're talking about that are skills for 2000 and sorry, t for 2030, you know, curiosity, lifelong learning, resilience, motivation, self-awareness, empathy, leadership, and social influence, this all comes from EQ. And so the blind spot that they have is not understanding the increased pressure our brains are under because we are relentless in our quest for social media, for the demands of our job. We don't give ourselves a break. Our parasympathetic nervous system isn't able to do the work it's meant to do, which is why we're in burnout. So please do think about the brain, do think about how we're exhausting ourselves, and think that in fact, EQ has to be the antidote for the demands we continue to put on ourselves and our people.
You know, this really hits home to me. The EQ being a nice to have. Sandra, do you remember years ago that we didn't call them soft skills? We called them critical skills.
Yeah.
And the language changed. Somewhere the language changed to soft skills.
Yeah.
But I remember when I first got into teaching and leadership development, these things were critical skills.
Yeah.
And recently, actually almost to the day, 6 weeks ago, I broke my fibula. Never broken my first broken. I tore ligaments in one right leg, and then I broke my fibula in my left leg. So, for the first time in my life, Sandra, I'm not able. I was not able to walk. I'm not able to walk. Well, what I hear you say is, we're so busy, and we're just going and going, and we're really not. That's why you get burnout and all those things. And when I have no ability to walk, so that really has stopped me in the last 6 weeks and really made me think about taking care of my brain. And I hope that doesn't happen to anyone that's listening. I hope it doesn't take something so dramatic for us to heed what you're saying here. And what you're saying is we exhaust ourselves, right? And it shouldn't take something so significant for us to be smart. And that's what you're trying to get us to understand, is that we need to protect our brain and to be very smart about that. This is not, your EQ is not a nice to have. It controls how you handle every single thing. So I really appreciate that. Okay. I have one last question, but I wish I had 400 more, and I know I do. Okay. Can you share an example or a case study where you did apply this neuroscience, this brain, neuroscience-based emotional intelligence principles that transformed maybe customer satisfaction or maybe an employee's well-being? Do you have an example of that for us?
So I don't have any that I can share with you here, but I also want to talk about something that is accessible to everyone,
Okay.
for them to go and dig into and find out more about. So Google has a program called Search Inside Yourself. You probably heard about it. And I know that Amazon have a program now called Epic, which is all about emotional intelligence too. But this Google thing. So when I was deciding how to become an emotional intelligence coach and to get real deep, I was thinking about either this program or the Goleman program. I went with Goleman in the end, but Google have transformed how they operate. And when I give you these results now, okay, the post-program survey for participants who took part in Search Inside Themselves, they had 46% reduction in stress levels, 32% overall increase in well-being, but a staggering 20% increase improvement in
Wow.
focus and productivity. 20% improvement on focus and productivity. They just speak
Incredible.
for themselves, don't they? Because for an organization that is all about the tech, all about innovation, all about, the pressures those people must be under, but to bring this program in, which was teaching all of the things we've talked about and plus some, but they were getting that type of result across their organization. 46% reduction in stress levels. I mean,
That's insane.
isn't it?
That's incredible. And 20% on focus and improvement.
And productivity. And, so organizations that go down this route and it's soft skills, inverted commas, rubbish. They have
Yeah.
saved an inordinate amount of money, but most importantly, they are helping their humans live better lives. We have a moral obligation, a responsibility for the people who work with us to ensure they can cope with the speed of life, the demands on life, the ability to balance so many different things. And the reason why I mentioned this program too is because there is a really good book about Search Inside Yourself that you can get. I can't remember when it was published, but if you Google Search Inside Yourself on Amazon, you'll find it. And they made it accessible to people outside of their organization. It was a program that anyone could join. And ultimately, I just think, while I don't have a statistic on this, conflict in teams reduced significantly. Engagement and retention went up noticeably. The investment in this type of program pays itself back with people wanting to stay.
Yeah, that doesn't even offer up a discuss. It's not a discussion at that. I love how you just drop the facts there. That's not a discussion. If it's 20% focus on focus and productivity, a 40% reduction in stress level, as like
That's right.
if you own a
46.
so, yeah, 46. If you own a company or you're in a position of leadership, this should be a must-have. This should not be if we have the money or if we. I'm not trying to get anybody to buy anything. We're not selling anything here. We're just saying if you care about people in general, right? What kind of human are you? If you care about people in general, then you'll understand that this is not an option, like water.
That's it, and I do believe as well that often cynics are blown away by the power of this thing. I've coached a lot of people in my time, as I know that you have too, and I love the cynic that comes to me because I think, well, I have nothing to lose in teaching you what I know. And I know that after maybe three conversations, when you've tried a couple of these things, when you've turned the temperature down on your shower and you've stood in cold water for a minute to get a reality through, the Wim Hof technique, to
Yeah.
breathe in a different way, to replay a situation in slow motion so you see things in a different way. All of these little things that people start to do that are different, that just change things, that take you out from the autopilot, from the common, from just not really living. When you interrupt that course, that's when growth happens.
Yes. I'm experiencing that now for myself. When you interrupt the course, you actually see growth happen. Well, thank you. I need you to go back to your partner, and I'm serious about this Sandra doll. Do you hear me?
He would be horrified. Oh my gosh.
Listen, I think your phone number's on your website. Contact you. So all of our podcasters, I think you need to go and contact her. We're rooting for a Sandra doll. The brain will have to be bigger than the rest of the body, okay? So I can help you art
Oh,
this
that's
out. I can help you art this out. Well, thank you. I want to go back to the quote that's in your eulogy that says, "One thing's for sure that we've seen today with you living and breathing," and we'll say this while you're living and breathing. Tanya Tucker is a country music artist, and she got later in her years, and she said she wrote a song later in life, and she said, "Bring my flowers now while I'm still living." And it made me think about, I want to say to you that one thing's for sure, using your words, you are driven. You are absolutely driven, driven to do anything. And I can see it that you can for your own learning, because I see that, you know, you study this and you keep studying this, and you're, by coming on here today, we're not Joe Rogan. This is not billions of listeners, but I see your heart coming through your brain. That if it's just 8 listeners or 800 or 80,000 or 8 million, that you are driven to do anything you can for your own learning and to help others progress as well. So thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it. I absolutely enjoyed getting to meet you. Hopefully this is not our last time to see each other.
Yeah, and
until next time, podcasters, we'll see you on the next eTech Leadership Table. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Sincerely, thank you.